Nick stared at him, unable to speak, even though she tried. Benny tugged the worn leather diary out of his back pocket and pressed it into her hands. "I found this on the floor in your room. I kept it. I haven't opened it, haven't read it. I kept it because as long as I had it, I knew I'd find you again." Nix took the diary, and in the pale light from the stars and moon, she ran her fingers across the cover and along the binding. When she raised her eyes to look at Benny, her eyes were wet with new tears. "Benny, I..." she began. But before she could say anything more, he bent forward and kissed her. It was the wrong time, the wrong place, the wrong circumstances. There was nothing right in their whole world except that kiss. Chapter 40. Nix fell asleep with her head in his lap. Benny stayed awake for another couple of hours, stroking her hair and staring into the infinite star field that stretched above him. After that first scalding kiss, there had been others. And then there had been more tears as the full reality of her loss hit Nix. These tears were quieter, though. They weren't the tears of shock and denial. They'd already been through that storm. These were the deep, heartbroken tears of acceptance. Their lives had changed. Their worlds had changed. As he sat there, stroking Nix's hair, Benny had the weird feeling that if he turned around, he would be able to see yesterday and the day before that, all the way back to the point where he had decided to apprentice with Tom. It had been at that moment that his footfalls had diverged from the sane and predictable course of his life. He wished he could call out to the Benny of 10 days ago and shout a warning not to come this way. Take the job at the pit. Work for the German locksmith. Get a tower job with Chong. Anything but this. As he thought about it, Benny felt sickness creeping into his mind, making ugly questions form like tumors. Would all of this have happened if I didn't take that damn job with Tom? And worse yet, would any of it have happened? On a deep level, he knew that these thoughts were stupid and wrong. Charlie and the hammer would still have come after Tom and Sachetto, and Nix's mom. Wouldn't they? He also knew the guilt he felt was no different than the guilt Nix felt for having told Zack about her mother knowing Lila. Things said and done innocently should never be used as weapons. There was guilt here, he finally decided, but it all belonged to Charlie. Just thinking that name made fires ignite in the pit of his stomach. For the first time in his life, he wished that Tom was here to help him make sense of it. Tom. Benny had hated him most of his life, and had just started to like him, even if he didn't quite understand him. And now the Zoms had gotten him. The sudden realization that Tom was not only dead, but was probably a Zom, was like a punch in the face. Benny closed his eyes and found that old, old memory of Mom in her white dress with red sleeves, handing him to Tom, screaming at Tom to run, and Tom running away, leaving her behind. Tom the zombie hunter. Tom the coward. Tom the zombie. Would there be a new zombie card? 2 weeks ago, Benny might have thought that was funny. Or appropriate. Now the horror of it was bigger than the night that loomed around him. He remembered the argument they'd had when Tom showed him the old man and the girl in the waitress uniform. "It's not the same. These are zombies, man. They kill people. They eat people," Tom had said. "They used to be people." Now Tom was one of them. He tried not to think of what Tom's last few seconds had been like. The hammer's shotgun blast had caught him. Benny had seen the blood fly. Had the blast killed him? That would have been a kindness. The alternative was beyond horrible. Falling down into the mass of them, covered in blood. White hands clawing at his skin. Rotting gray teeth biting into him. Tearing at him. Tom didn't deserve that. Benny was unsure if Tom was a coward or had ever been a coward. He doubted his own memories of first night, or, at least, of what those old memories meant. No matter what, though, Tom didn't deserve what had happened to him. He shivered, and Nick stirred restlessly. Looking at her dragged his mind into another room of thought. That kiss. With Nix? Nix, of all people. It was absurd, impossible. They'd already come to that hurdle back in town, and they hadn't been able to climb it together. It was dangerous and wrong to fall in love with a friend. It complicated things. He and Chong had once sworn they would never ever fall for a girl they knew. A bold claim in a town as small as Mountainside. Now, Nix Reilly lay asleep on his lap, and he swore he could still feel the warmth of her lips on his. He tugged the battered and sweat-stained zombie card from his shirt pocket and looked at the lost girl. A dagger of guilt stabbed him beneath the breastbone, and he quickly glanced down at Nix. He could see her eyes move under her closed lids and knew that she was dreaming. A soft cry escaped her parted lips, and it was filled with jagged pieces of emotion. Hurt and loss, despair and terror, but also rage and defiance. Benny brushed a strand of hair away from her cheek. His stomach churned with confusion and conflict. Even now, even after that incredible kiss he and Nix had shared, when he looked at the picture of the lost girl, he felt an almost physical impact. The desire to find and protect Lila was every bit as strong now as it was when he'd first turned over her card on the porch at Lafferty's General Store. And that made as little sense to him now as it did then. He didn't know this girl. Even Sachetto and Tom hadn't really known her. Even if she was still out here somewhere, she was nothing and no one to him. And yet. He studied the card for a long time, even as exhaustion dragged on his eyelids. Nix groaned again in the private hell of her troubled sleep. Benny looked from Nix to the lost girl, and back to Nix. "I'm sorry," he said. Then he stretched out his other hand, and for the second time he opened his fingers and let the wind take the card. It blew high into the air, tumbling over and over again, its pasteboard face flashing with silver starlight, and then it dropped into the darkness below. Benny bent and kissed Nix's cheek. He leaned back against the wall and stared at the night and drifted off into a sea of stars. Chapter 41. "Now ain't this just adorable?" Benny and Nix jerked awake at the sound of the voice, blinking in the harsh dawn light, struggling to disentangle themselves from each other and understand where on earth they were. Two men stood on the metal catwalk that ran around the outside of the deserted ranger station. Both men had guns holstered on their hips, shotguns slung over their shoulders, and ugly smiles on their mouths. Skins and Turk. "Ain't nothing like young love," said Turk. "Warms the cockles of my heart," agreed Skins. Benny instinctively spread his arms, like a barrier between the bounty hunters and Nix. "Charlie's going to like this," said Skins. "He was pretty smoked about the little witch skipping out like that. Leave us alone, Benny said with a growl.
Yeah, Turk laughed. That's gonna happen. We spent the whole damn night searching these freaking woods and then climbed this big mother of a tower just to go away 'cause you asked. Yes, sir, we'll be on our way, so sorry to bother your beauty sleep.
Skins tapped his palm on his thigh, like he was calling in the dogs.
Come on, get your butts over here.
Benny and Nick slowly got to their feet, but they made no move toward the bounty hunters. Turk went into the ranger station and came out with the Bakken.
Look, he said. Kid has a toy sword.
He raised it over his head and brought it down in a powerful two-hand swing on the metal rail. The hardwood rebounded from the hit, but it didn't break. Turk cursed and turned it sideways and slammed the flat of the blade onto the rail, and with a sharp crack the sword snapped in half. The long end went spinning off into the canopy of trees far below. Turk laughed and tossed the broken handle onto the catwalk.
They have anything else in there? Skins asked.
Nah.
Then let's haul it, snapped Skins to Benny and Nix. Come on, kids. Charlie is going to have a lot of stuff to talk to you two about. Should be a pretty interesting chat.
A heart-to-heart, Turk laughed.
A meaningful discussion, agreed Skins.
Let us go, said Nix. You can do that. You can just tell Charlie that you didn't find us.
Skins looked genuinely confused.
Now why on earth would we want to do that?
Benny took a step forward.
Do you know what Charlie did last night?
None of my business.
You're with him. You're helping him do this stuff.
Skins looked bored.
Is this where you try to appeal to my better nature, kid?
Behind him, Turk cracked up.
Good luck with that.
Please, Benny said. We didn't do anything to you.
Who cares?
I won't let you take her.
Skin suddenly backhanded Benny across the face. It was so fast and hard that Benny was falling before he realized that he'd been hit. He hit the railing with the small of his back and might have gone over if Nix hadn't grabbed him and hauled him away. Benny sank to his knees and spit blood and a piece of tooth onto the catwalk.
Leave him alone, Nix yelled.
The bounty hunter snatched a handful of Nix's hair, tore her away from Benny, and slammed her against the station wall.
Shut up, girlie. You don't tell us what to do.
Benny came off the deck in a surge and drove his fist into Skins's ribs. It was a good try, but he was still dizzy from the blow he'd taken, and his fist merely skittered along the big man's side. Skins pivoted and drove a heavy punch into Benny's back, nailing him squarely between the shoulder blades and knocking him flat onto his chest.
Try that crap again, kid, and I'll cut pieces off of you.
It was all Benny could do to breathe. When he'd landed, his breastbone had struck the broken Bakken handle, and it felt like the hardwood had punched a hole through his chest.
Benny, Nix cried,
but when she tried to bend to help him, Turk grabbed her by the sleeve and pulled her away. The action caused her shirt to ride high and expose most of her midriff. Both of the bounty hunters whistled and laughed and made comments that were as vulgar as they were threatening. Nix didn't give in or give up. She fought them, kicking out as hard as she could, slapping at Turk's face, raking her nails on his arms, pounding her fist on his chest and cheeks. Her attack was so sudden and fierce that for a moment the bounty hunter reeled back, letting go of her to use both hands to block his face. Nix tried to kick him in the groin, but Turk turned his hip and swatted her hard enough across the face to spin her into the wall again. She hit hard and slid down to her knees.
Filthy little whore, Turk growled.
His lip and right ear were already swelling. But even then, Nix wouldn't stop. As Benny watched, she launched herself from her knees and drove into Turk's legs, knocking him back against the rail. She made a sound like a hunting cat, a snarl that started low in her gut and rose up, filtered through rage and humiliation and the certain knowledge of what the future held. Her scream scared the birds from the trees and echoed off the mountain slope. Turk kept backing away from her, startled and confused by this child who had been frightened and cowering all last night, and who was now attacking him with insane strength and speed.
"Slap some sense into that little hellcat," demanded Skins. "Screw it. Let me do it."
Skins stepped over Benny and reached to take a handful of Nix's hair, just as Turk caught one of her wrists and then another. Skins drew a knife with his free hand.
"I've had enough of your crap, girly girl. You don't need both eyes to fight in the zombie pits."
That was all Benny could take. Even though he could barely breathe, he dug one hand under his chest and grabbed the broken Bakken handle, then jammed the other hand hard against the catwalk and heaved himself to his knees.
"Leave her alone," he screamed.
And with all of the fury and fear that flowed through him, he drove the jagged end of the Bakken into Skin's back. When the sword had snapped, it left a hardwood stump that was as sharp as a real blade, and Benny threw his weight behind the thrust. The jagged point bit deep into the soft spot above the bounty hunter's belt, and Benny buried it to the hilt. Blood ran hot and red over his fist, and Skins whirled and clubbed him down. Benny fell, raising his arms to ward off the next blow, but Skins stood there, gasping like a fish out of water, eyes bugged wide in unbelieving surprise. Nix stamped down hard on Turk's foot and tore her wrists free of his grip, then shoved him in the chest as hard as she could, hoping to knock him over the rail. Turk was so busy staring at Skins that he was caught off guard and staggered back all the way to the rail by the ladder, but he didn't go over. Instead, he caught his balance at the last second. Skins dropped heavily to his knees, the impact causing the metal catwalk to ring like a bell. His eyes rolled up, and he fell forward onto his face with a meaty crunch.
"You're dead," Turk snarled at Benny.
He grabbed his pistol and whipped it from the holster, thumbing back the hammer in a smooth and practiced move.
"I'll frigging kill you both for—"
That was all he got out. It was all he would ever say again. He looked down at his chest, at the bizarre thing that suddenly sprouted from between the ribs on the left side. Benny and Nick stared as well. The whole front of Turk's shirt exploded with red as 3 gleaming inches of sharpened steel extruded from the bounty hunter's chest. He tried to say something, but there was no air left in his lungs, no power left in his voice. Behind him there was a blur of movement and a grunt of effort. The blade vanished, pulled back into the wound and then out of Turk's body. Benny watched as the person behind him cocked a leg, placed a foot on the bounty hunter's body, and shoved him forward, so that he landed face down, inches from Skins. The figure stood there in the harsh morning sunlight. Tattered jeans and hand-sewn leather moccasins, a shirt that had once been bright with a wildflower pattern, with a leather pouch slung across her body on a thin strap. Hair the color of newly fallen snow swirled around her tanned face, and she stared at them with cunning, hazel eyes. In her tanned hands, she held a spear crudely made from a long piece of quarter-inch black pipe wrapped in leather and topped with the blade from a Marine Corps bayonet. The Lost Girl. Chapter 42. "Who are you?" Nix asked, but at the same time Benny spoke her name.
"Lila."
The girl stiffened, and the bloody spear swung around in his direction. Her hazel eyes narrowed into dangerous slits. Benny held up his hands.
"No, wait. I'm Benny Amura."
She showed no sign of recognition.
"I'm Tom Amura's brother."
The girl said nothing.
"My brother, Tom, he knew George."
If he had struck her across the face, he couldn't have changed her expression more quickly. The suspicion vanished to be replaced by shock.
George?
She spoke the name, as if her throat was dusty from disuse, and Benny realized that in a very real way it probably was. Almost immediately her suspicions returned, and the tip of the spear rose another inch, level with his eye.
Where?
She demanded.
George!
Nix glanced at Benny, putting things together very quickly.
Is this her? She whispered.
George!
The lost girl prompted with a shake of her spear. Her voice was still a husky whisper, and Benny remembered that horrible story that Rob Sechetto had told him, of how Lila had started screaming when the men in that little cottage had been forced to kill her mother after she'd reanimated as a zombie. She screamed herself raw, and then she stopped talking. Those screams must have damaged her vocal cords for good, leaving her with a voice like a graveyard whisper.
God.
I don't know where he is, Benny said quickly. My brother knew him. He helped George look for you. Look for me?
It was clearly hard for the girl to form sentences. It was a skill that she lost over time. Benny couldn't imagine going for years without speaking to anyone. In some odd way, that was as bad as living out here in the zombie wasteland.
When the bounty hunters took you and your sister from George, he started looking for you.
Benny risked taking a slight step toward her, despite the threat of the deadly spear.
He never stopped, Lila. George never stopped looking for you. And for Annie.
At the mention of her sister's name, Lila's eyes filled with tears, but her mouth tightened into a bitter line.
Lila, listen to me. The men who hurt you, the men who hurt Annie and George.
Benny, Nix said softly,
don't. Those same men hurt Nix's mother.
He turned his head for a second to indicate Nix.
They hurt her, and she died.
Lila held her ground, eyes boring into his.
And they killed my brother.
Benny licked his lips.
Those men took the people we all loved. They took from each of us.
As Benny said it, he realized that he did love Tom. As troubled and confused as their relationship had once been, Benny felt an ache that went all the way to the core of his heart.
They hurt all of us, Lila. Do you understand? All of us.
He leaned on that last word and saw how it worked on her, changing her eyes and the line of her mouth. The spear tip wavered ever so slightly.
Us, he repeated. You, Nix, me, us.
Benny waited for a moment, his heart pounding in his chest, and then took another step forward. The tip of the spear was inches from his face now. Moving very slowly, hands open, eyes fixed on Lila's, he reached up and touched the point where the Marine Corps bayonet was attached to the shaft of the spear. He pushed it aside, and the lost girl allowed it. After a moment, she stepped back and lowered the weapon.
Us,
she said.
Us, agreed Benny.
After a moment, Nix said,
us.
Abruptly, the lost girl stiffened and looked over the rail. Benny and Nix looked as well, but if there was something to see, they didn't see it. Lila, however, did.
Go,
she snapped.
Now! Now!
Without waiting to see if they followed, she spun around and climbed down the ladder as quickly and smoothly as a monkey. Nix followed, but Benny lingered for a moment, looking at the man he'd killed.
Benny, Nix called.
Wait. Give me a second, he said. I have work to do.
He took the weapons from the dead men, stripping off Turk's gun belt and buckling it around his narrow waist. The gun was heavy, but the weight was comforting. He left the shotguns. They were big and clumsy, and he had never fired one before. Now didn't seem like the time to fool around with unfamiliar weapons. However, he took Skin's knife. It wasn't as good as Tom's double-bladed dagger or the hunting knife Benny had lost back at the field, but it would do. Benny knelt beside the corpse for a second, the naked blade in his hand. "This is probably cutting you a break," he muttered. "But we may need this place again." With that, he plunged the tip of the blade into the back of the man's neck, right below the skull, quieting him. He pulled the blade free, lips curled in disgust, and then repeated the process with Turk. Then he wiped the blade clean on Turk's shirt, slid the knife into the sheath on the gun belt, and climbed down to catch up with Nix and Lila. His mind churned with what he had just done. Closure, of a kind, although it felt more like taking out the garbage than giving peace to the dead. Either way, it was necessary work. All part of the family business. Chapter 43. Benny and Nix followed the lost girl into the woods that surrounded the ranger station. She led them 30 yards up a crooked path that had been carved by rain runoff, making sure to step on rocks or fallen logs, leaving no footprints at all. Nix noticed that first and pointed it out to Benny, and they imitated her careful ways, though it meant that they went more slowly and with far less grace than the lithe Lila. Lila suddenly stopped with her head cocked to listen.
"Hide!"
she hissed with quiet urgency, and immediately she appeared to vanish into a tangle of wild roses. Nix pulled Benny down behind an ancient rhododendron, and they huddled together, trying to make themselves as small as rabbits.
"What is it?"
Benny whispered, but Nix jabbed him in the ribs and pointed. They had a good view of the open space at the base of the tower, and the various game trails that crisscrossed in front of it. At first, Benny didn't see anything, but then the tall grass and the clearing shifted, and a man stepped very cautiously out of hiding. Charlie Mathias. Nix gave a sharp inward hiss and grabbed Benny's arm with such force that he thought she'd break the bones. Her fingernails dug into his flesh, and from that point of contact, he could feel a shudder of disgust and murderous fury wash through her. Here was the man who had killed her mother. With his other hand, Benny reached for the pistol at his hip, but Lila appeared out of nowhere and touched his arm. When he looked at her, she shook her head and nodded to the other side of the clearing. Three more men stepped into the sunlight. The Hammer and the Mekong brothers. All of them carried guns. The men walked to the foot of the ranger tower, casting cautious looks at the surrounding woods and checking the ground for footprints. When they passed the spot where Lila had led Nix and Benny into the woods, the men saw nothing to attract their attention. At the base of the ladder, the Hammer cupped his hands around his mouth and gave a short, sharp whistle that sounded like a woodland bird. He waited for a few seconds, then made the call again. He turned to Charlie and shook his head.
"Go on up and see what's what,"
Charlie growled to Vin. His voice carried easily in the clear morning air.
"Yeah, maybe I'll find my lucky coin," Vin said as he turned toward the ladder. But Charlie grabbed him by the shoulder and spun him around.
"You have something to say, boy? You say it to my face."
Vin looked up at Charlie, and for a moment Benny thought that the smaller man was going to try something. He was holding his shotgun. He could have stepped back and brought the gun up into Charlie's face. One act of courage or pride, and the devil would be on his way down. Nix gripped Benny's wrist and gave it a pump, as if that would somehow encourage Vin to do the right thing. In the end, however, Vin did the cowardly thing. He mumbled something and lowered both his eyes and his gun.
Go about your business, then, Charlie said flatly. Get your skinny butt up that ladder and see what those two morons are doing.
Vin shot a quick look at Joey Duke, but he didn't let Charlie see his expression. He slung his shotgun across his back and began climbing as the other men trained their weapons on the catwalk. Vin went up carefully and slowly, and when his head and shoulders were just above the level of the platform, he froze. Benny could hear his curses floating through the trees.
"What is it?" demanded Charlie.
"You better get up here, boss."
With a growl, Charlie and the hammer climbed to the catwalk while Joey remained at ground level to guard the ladder. Benny had to crab sideways a few yards to see the three men as they stood there, examining the bodies of their fallen comrades. It was then that the reality of what he'd done hit Benny.
"I killed a man. Not a zombie, but a real, living human being."
He listened inside for his conscience to scream about the wrongness of it, but all he heard echoing through his internal darkness was the sound of Morgie's trembling voice back at Nix's house and the sound of Tom's voice as he held Jesse Riley, and the sound of Nix's awful sobs last night. If his conscience had something to say about what he'd done, it didn't dare say it loud enough to be heard. And some other part of him wished that he'd driven that wooden spike into the big man with the pale skin and the one red eye, who stood with his fists on his hips 30 yards away. If only Tom had taught him how to shoot. But then, he reflected, he knew enough about handguns to understand that 30 yards was a long way for any kind of accuracy. Even if he emptied the entire magazine at the catwalk, he might not hit anyone and would, in turn, draw deadlier fire from their long guns. Charlie had a rifle slung on his back. He bent close to Nix and Lila and mouthed the words, "Stay or go." Lila made a palms-down gesture. "Stay." Charlie went to the rail of the catwalk and looked out over the mountain slope and the surrounding forest. He swept his eyes slowly from one side to the other, and for one chilling moment his gaze rested on the spot where Benny and the girls crouched. Could that evil red eye see them? Then the big man's gaze swept past. The hammer came and stood beside him.
"This is a complete waste of time, Charlie. We need to get them kids and get our asses over the hill."
"I don't like leaving it like this," growled Charlie. "Unfinished business is sloppy."
"Yeah, well, wasting time is wasting money," retorted the hammer. "We already got us a round dozen for the games."
"What if the Amura pup gets back to town?"
The hammer laughed at the idea.
"There's an army of zombies between him and safe, Charlie. Best case scenario for him is that he falls and breaks his neck before they get him."
"Worst case scenario is that I pick up his trail," said Charlie.
"Truer words, brother," said the hammer, slapping him on the back. "Truer words."
"Okay, let's roll. Houston, John, and Bull should be getting in tonight, and I want to be on the move at first light."
Charlie turned away and they began climbing down, leaving the bodies of their friends behind, as if they weren't even worth the effort to bury. The men reached the ground and faded back into the tall grass. From their direction, Benny figured they were going back to the highway or to some spot near it, where their own trail would take them to their camp. Benny turned to Nix and opened his mouth to speak, but Lila put a finger to her lips and held it there for a long minute. Then, she rose slowly from her crouch and searched the clearing and the woods beyond it. Finally, the tension left her shoulders, and she turned to Benny and Nix.
"Thank you," he said to Lila.
The lost girl looked momentarily confused, as if she didn't know how to respond to that. Nix said,
"How did you know that we needed help?"
Lila's mouth worked as she tried to sort out how to answer, testing and tasting different words. For the second time, Benny wondered how long it had been since she'd spoken with another human being.
"Follow,"
she began, then changed the word.
Following men. Following men?
She ended it as a question, hoping they understood. You were following the men? Nix asked.
Yes, she said. Following the men. I was. Since, dark morning.
Since dawn?
Dawn,
Lila agreed, smiling a little.
I was following the men since dawn.
Why were you following them? Benny asked. Lila thought about it.
You.
Us?
Saw you last night. Saw you run from them. Walkers. Men. Heard shots. Followed. Heard you last night, crying. Talking.
Benny cut a quick look at Nix, who avoided his eyes. Had this feral girl heard them kissing? Benny thought about it, then dismissed it. The kisses were hot, but they weren't loud. On the other hand, he mused, she could have stood on this very spot and watched them kiss. As he thought it, he realized that Nix had already reached that conclusion, hence her avoiding his eyes. Lila, last night, when you heard us talking, did you hear everything we said? She considered, shrugged, then nodded. Did you understand? That small smile flickered over her lips again.
I understand, just not.
She waved a hand back and forth between them.
You're just not used to talking, Nix said. Not used to conversation?
Conversation.
Lila repeated the word slowly, enjoying it. Benny said, we have to get out of here. We have to get back to town.
Do you know about town? About Mountainside? Where we live?
No, some. Not much.
Can you take us there? Nix asked.
Can,
Lila said.
Won't.
Benny frowned. You won't? How come?
Eat, she said.
And when they didn't react, she looked irritated and mimed the action of picking up food and eating it.
Eat!
Yes, Benny said. I understand that we have to eat, but we also have to get home.
As soon as you said it, the reality of that word, home, hung in the air filled with ugly images and new meanings.
Home to what?
Nix asked, turning sharply to him.
Home to who?
He began, but clearly he had no idea of where to go with that thought. She was completely right.
Home to who?
Her mother was dead, so was Tom. Both of them had empty houses back in Mountainside. Empty houses and wrecked lives.
Eat, Lila said. Eat first. Eat and think.
Eat where? Here?
Lila shook her head.
Follow.
Without another word, Lila turned and headed into the woods along a path that whipped and turned, snake-like as it cut around the shoulders of the mountain. Nix tried to talk to Lila as they walked, but the lost girl shook her head and moved way out front, apparently liking to be in her own head when out in the wild. Soon they heard the gurgle of water, and several times they glimpsed streams that cut downland toward Coldwater Creek. Seeing the streams was comforting, because Benny knew that he could use them to find the creek and from there, maybe find his way back to Mountainside. But just thinking of the creek reminded him of Tom. Nix must have noticed a look on his face and asked him what was wrong.
Thinking about Tom, Benny said.
She nodded.
I know. I'm sorry for what I said about him.
Mom really cared for him. I think maybe she was a little bit in love with him.
I think it went both ways, Nix.
He gave a short, self-deprecating laugh.
I used to think I was a reasonably intelligent person. Not like Chong. No one is, Nick said with a smile. And not like you. She said nothing. But I'm not completely dense.
Okay, but what's your point?
I never told anyone about this, Benny began, and then he told her about his memory of first night, and of his mother in the white dress and red sleeves and screaming mouth, of Tom taking him and running away. It's the first thing I remember, Benny concluded, and it's how I used to see Tom.
As what? She asked,
although Benny thought she'd already guessed where he was going with this.
As a coward.
I think he ran away.
Maybe, she said.
Maybe your mom told him to get you to safety.
She did.
Tom told me that much, and I believe him, but he didn't go back for her. He didn't do anything to help her. All he did was run. Nix was quiet as they climbed over some rocks. Lila was almost 100 yards up the trail and didn't show any sign of slowing down to let them catch up.
Is she what you expected to find? Nix asked,
one eyebrow arched.
Not even a little, Benny said.
She's pretty weird.
She'd have to be, said Nix.
Living out here? Fighting Zoms and dodging guys like Charlie every day?
Yeah, if it was me, I'd have gone buggy a long time ago.
Nix dropped down on the far side of the rocks and waited for Benny to scramble down. They moved along up the trail, side by side.
The thing is, Benny said, what if I was wrong about Tom all this time?
What makes you ask now?
Stuff that's happened. Seeing how he was out in the ruin the first time he took me out here. He was smart and skillful. He knew things and could do things that I never knew about.
That's true of most people until you get to know them, she said. And sometimes even after you think you know them really well.
He nodded. Then there's the way people talk about him. They act like he was all Joe Tough.
I think the Hammer and Charlie were even a little scared of him outside of Mr. Sachetto's house.
Well, maybe the Hammer was scared and Charlie was just cautious.
But why? Tom wasn't big, and he wasn't strong like those two guys.
My mom said she saw him fight once, but she would never tell me under what circumstances.
Benny guessed that Mrs. Riley had probably been referring to the time Tom rescued her from Gameland.
Yeah, and I saw him face down Vin Trong and Joey Duke while all those Zoms were closing in on us.
Tom was figuring it out. Maybe he was stressed, but I kept looking for him to be afraid, because that's what I expected to see when the chips were down.
But?
But all he did was fight.
He died fighting.
There's another thing, Nick said, her eyes sad. Charlie and the Hammer went over to Mr. Sachetto's and killed him. They broke into our house, but they didn't attack Tom directly. Benny sighed and trudged along beside her for a while, lost in a sick depression.
It sucks, he said eventually. Tom died thinking that his brother, the only relative he had left on Earth, thought he was a piece of crap coward.
He shook his head.
But I stopped thinking that the first time he took me out here. I'd give a lot to change things between us.
Nix took his hand and squeezed it. There was a whole world full of things they both wished they could change. Chapter 44 They followed Lila through a forest of ancient oaks that was so lush that the canopy of leaves cast everything below into a twilight darkness. Morning mist clung to the mossy ground, and the trunks of the trees rose, like ghosts in the humid gloom. After only a few steps into this nightmare landscape, the wind settled and died, leaving behind a dreadful stillness.
It was Nix who first heard the moans of the dead.
Wait, she hissed, dropping into a crouch. Zoms!
Benny pulled the big hunting knife he'd taken from the dead bounty hunter. The moan was a wordless cry of hunger that drifted to them through the pillars of the oak trees, like the plaintive call of a wandering ghost.
Where is it? Nix whispered.
There, said Benny, pointing.
I think it's coming from over there.
Lila bent and ran quickly in that direction, her feet making no sound on the mossy ground, her body bent, spear ready.
Benny, said Nix. She's running toward the zombies.
50 yards up the trail, Lila stopped and waved to them.
And she wants us to follow.
Oh, crap. Well, said Nix, she's your object of obsession.
Very funny.
Reluctantly and slowly, they followed. The closer they got, the louder was the moan of the zombie. It was different from the other zom voices that Benny had heard, although he couldn't yet put his finger on what was different. Whatever it was, it made the hairs on his arms and the back of his neck stand up. They reached Lila, and together they crept around a bend in the path. A zombie stood right in front of them. He had once been a great brute of a man, and even withered and dead, he had a massive chest and broad shoulders, and hands that looked big enough to snap Benny in half. He was wearing a mechanic's coveralls, and there was a line of gaping black bullet holes across his chest and stomach. Nix yelped in fear. Benny cried out and brought up his knife, ready to make a fight of it. He crowded Nix backward, willing to sacrifice himself for her. The moan of the zombie changed to a growl of immediate need, and his wrinkled lips curled away from rotted yellow teeth. The forest around them erupted into a chorus of other hungry moans, as an army of the undead began to howl for their flesh. Benny and Nix turned and saw that there were indeed hundreds of zombies, men and women, children and adults, and they were everywhere. Lila had taken them the wrong way. Instead of leading them to safety, she'd stumbled into a terrible trap. Lila stood inches from the massive zombie. She turned to Benny and Nix and laughed.
What?
Nix said, blinking as if it was her eyes and not her mind that needed clearing.
You bitch, Benny snarled. You betrayed us.
Chapter 45. The moans of the dead filled the entire forest. Benny and Nix stood back to back. Without realizing it, they had already passed dozens of the zombies as they followed Lila into the woods, and looking back they could see them standing there, dead eyes turned their way. Lila put her hand on the center of the big zombie's chest. The lost girl was still laughing. The big zombie tried to grab her, tried to bite her, but it couldn't do either.
What?
Benny said softly. His mind was struggling to understand this moment. And then he saw it. The zombie was tied to the tree. A length of sturdy rope was wrapped around its waist, and shorter lengths anchored each hand. It could move its hands a few inches, but that's all. Benny turned and saw that the zombie by the next closest tree was similarly bound, and the next.
They're all tied up, said Nix, turning in a slow circle. It was true.
The forest was filled with hundreds upon hundreds of zombies, and every one of them was tied to a tree. In some places, three or four were tied to the trunks of massive oaks.
I don't understand, said Nix. But Benny did.
He suddenly remembered something Tom had told him about Charlie rounding up zombies and tying them to trees, so that he could find them more easily if he got a bounty. He knew where they were. The hungry forest. Nix wheeled on Lila.
You think this is funny?
Lila's eyes twinkled.
Yes.
very funny. Your faces.
She laughed, and the sound of it drew another series of long moans from the dead.
What is this place? Nix demanded.
Benny told her. Lila listened and nodded, and Nix looked horrified. Lila pointed out a few trees where the ropes had been cut and the zombs taken.
God, Nix said. Charlie's harvesting them.
Sometimes, Lila said, I come here, cut some loose, let them go.
Why?
I do it when I think Charlie is coming.
An ambush.
Sweet, Benny said with a grin.
Sick and twisted, but sweet.
Oh, and sorry for calling you a bitch. She shrugged.
Been called worse. Don't care much.
Nix couldn't take her eyes off the legions of living dead.
How many of them are in here?
Lila considered, shrugged.
3,000? More.
It's horrible.
Lila shrugged again and turned to Benny.
You think it's horrible?
I'm not sure what I think about it, he said.
To Nix, Lila said,
2 times I came here and let them go. Cut all ropes.
Why?
To free them. They followed me to the field, by the water.
Geez, Benny said.
Those were the zombies we ran into by Coldwater Creek.
You let them go?
Lila nodded.
Sometimes, seeing them, tied, makes me sad. I untie and lead them away.
You lead them? How do you do that without getting chomped? Benny asked.
She looked at him as if he was a moron.
They're slow. I'm not slow.
Then she pinched the skin of her forearm.
They follow flesh.
Benny swallowed hard, trying to imagine a horde of zombies, shambling along after this beautiful and crazy lost girl. Lila looked up through a small opening in the canopy of the leaves at the position of the sun.
Time to go.
With that, she turned and walked deeper into the hungry forest. Each zombie she passed craned its neck and tried to bite her, but the lost girl didn't appear to notice or care. Benny and Nix lingered a moment longer, caught up in all of the different ways in which this place was wrong. Whether the zombies were tied to the trees or taken for bounties or freed to wander, the horror of it was overwhelming. The zombies closest to them moaned incessantly, biting the air, as if aching to feed on just the smell of living flesh.
Your girlfriend is deranged, said Nix.
She's not my girlfriend, thank you very much, and I believe Tom said the expression was touched by God.
She's touched all right.
Come on, this place is way beyond creepy.
Let's get out of here, Benny, Nix said. Right now.
With you on that, he agreed. But as they hurried along the path to catch up, Benny kept looking back, compelled to lock this image in his mind. There was something about it that was starting to shove ideas around in his head. Weird and wicked ideas. Nix caught the look on his face.
What is it?
Nothing, he lied. The thoughts running through his head were not thoughts he wanted to share with her. Not yet. Chapter 46. They came to a sheltered clearing by a rock cliff, through which a million years of erosion had cut a waterfall that fed all the streams that ran down to Coldwater Creek. It was a strange place. The woods were overgrown with vines and scrub pines, and the ground was covered with a thick carpet of pine needles. At the base of the cliff was a pool of threshing water that looked as clear as glass. However, all around the clearing there were dead animals in various stages of decomposition. The stink was ungodly,
and the air was thick with flies. Nix gagged, and Benny dug the bottle of mint paste from his pocket, showing her how to dab it below her nose to kill the smell. As he did so, he marveled at the restraint with which he'd managed to put up with his smell since last night. He'd realized that his clothes were probably still ripe with the stench of cadaverine. Lila stood at the point where the path reached the clearing.
"Here," she said, pointing to the waterfall.
"What, through there?" Benny asked. She nodded, then pointed to the open ground in front of them.
"Feet where my feet go."
Benny didn't immediately understand what she meant, and when she set off across the clearing in a weird zigzag pattern, he started walking straight toward the cool water. Lila turned abruptly.
"Stop!"
She hurried back, following the same twisted route.
"Stupid?"
she asked harshly, then knelt in front of him and dug her fingers under the covering of pine needles and lifted a section of ground that proved to be a very thin, woven screen, with needles and other debris cleverly sewn onto it. Beneath the screen was a hole that was filled with the pointed ends of wickedly sharp sticks.
"Oh my God," Benny said.
Nix gestured to the clearing. "Is the whole clearing like that?"
"Yes,"
said Lila in her graveyard whisper of a voice.
"So, watch my feet, where I walk only. Yes?"
"Absolutely," agreed Benny weakly. In a single file, they followed Lila around the clearing toward the cliff wall. There was no way anyone could have picked out a safe route through without knowing exactly where to step. Benny was impressed. Along the wall was a screen of bushy pine trees, and it wasn't until they'd all reached them that Benny and Nix could see that there was a narrow path behind them, which led to a depression behind the waterfall. The water cascaded out and away from the wall, and there was a cave mouth 5 feet high and 7 feet wide. The whole mouth of the cave was covered with multiple sheets of heavy industrial plastic that Lila had scavenged from somewhere. She pushed through, and they followed her into a short, damp chamber. Another set of plastic was hung 10 feet in, and behind that was a thick layer of heavy drapes. Benny was blown away by how smart this was. The plastic kept the water out, and the drapes kept light in, and together they muffled the roar of the waterfall. Lila went in first, and Benny followed, with Nix holding the drapes open to allow diffused light in. Lila apparently didn't need it, because she went into the darkest depths of the cave, and soon there was the scrape and smell of a sulfur match. Lila lit an oil lantern, and a comfortable yellow glow expanded out to fill the huge inner chamber. Benny and Nix were speechless. The cave was a treasure trove. There was a comfortable chair and a small table, a wire rack of dishes, barrels filled with canned food, some old toys and books. Thousands and thousands of books. Technical manuals and novels, anthologies of short stories and collections of poetry, biographies of great thinkers and joke books, magazines and comic books. There were stacks of books on every surface, heaped against the walls. Even in the town library, Benny had never seen so many books. Nix looked dazed, her mouth opened in a silent, "Oh." Lila looked from them to the books and back again.
"I read," she said simply.
Then Benny noticed the second thing that Lila had been collecting. There was a table made from boards stretched across stacks of heavy encyclopedias, and the table bent under the weight of weapons. Handguns and boxes of bullets, knives and clubs, spears and axes. Enough weapons to start, and win, a war. Benny realized Lila was doing exactly that, fighting a war. He walked over to the table, aware that Lila was watching him, and saw that a how-to manual for making bullet reloads was open and looked well-thumbed.
There were coffee cans filled with lead pellets and gunpowder, and a bullet mold with castings for various calibers. Several men in town had similar setups.
"This is amazing," he said.
She shrugged. It was commonplace to her. It was her day-to-day life. Lila folded some blankets and set them on the floor, then indicated that they could sit down while she started a fire in a small stone cooking pit. Benny noticed that the smoke funneled upward instead of filling the cave, and he bent forward to see that there was a hole in the ceiling. No daylight showed through, so he figured it didn't rise straight up, but instead filtered out through various fissures in the rock. He thought that Tom would approve. Benny watched Lila as she busied herself with what probably passed for her daily routine. Her first concern was security, and she checked the hang of the drapes to prevent any trace of light from showing through. Even a pinpoint of firelight would be visible for miles in the absolute darkness of these mountains at night. Then Lila strung two lines across the entrance. The first was a length of twine, on which dozens of empty tin cans and pieces of broken metal were strung. When it was in place, it lay against the drapes. If anyone moved the cloth, the metal would kick up a jangling din, loud enough to wake her. The second line was a length of silver wire she positioned at mid-shin level. It was virtually invisible in the gloom, but once someone passed the drapes, they would trip over it. Between the noise and this delaying trick, whoever broke in would not be sneaking up on a sleeping girl, but would be sprawled on the ground while a practice killer hunted them in the dark.
"Did you ever have to use that tripwire?" he asked.
He and Nix and their friends had learned all about simple booby traps in the scouts. They were good for slowing down a zombie attack. Lila tested the tension on the tripwire, plucking it like a guitar string so that it hummed.
"Once," she said. "It worked."
"Zom or human?" asked Nix. Lila shrugged.
"What does it matter?"
Once the entrance was rigged, she unbuckled her gun belt and placed it next to the pallet she used as a bed. She put the spear into an old umbrella stand in which there were various clubs, baseball bats, hockey sticks, and a long-handled axe.
"Lila," said Nix, "this place, all these things, it's incredible. You brought all of this here by yourself?"
Lila poured water into a cooking pot and began adding bits of meat and vegetables.
"By myself. Who else?"
"How many of these books have you read?"
"All."
She smiled for the first time since they'd started walking. She leaned over and began stirring the mixture in the pot.
"I read, better than talk. Sorry."
"Sorry?" said Benny enthusiastically. "Lila, you're amazing. Isn't she amazing, Nix?" Benny, caught up in the moment, turned to Nix, but her expression was a few hundred degrees colder than his. Benny's common sense took a giant step back for an emergency reevaluation of everything that had happened in the last few seconds. Lila, lit by the soft glow of the cook fire, was bending over and smiling. The inadequate rags of her shirt were doing even less of their job. Benny, who to his credit hadn't even been aware of all this, was suddenly very aware, and aware of the fact that Nix was watching both of them. The common sense part of him slapped his forehead and prayed for an earthquake or a timely invasion by a horde of zombies. Benny tried to salvage the moment by stretching his last question into a longer one.
"To have read so many books."
As lame attempts go, this one was barely able to limp. The grin he gave Nix was intended to be earnest, scholarly, and totally oblivious to the miles of cleavage Lila was showing. Nix's smile was chilly enough to kill houseplants. "And Chong fries Morgy for being thick," Benny thought, feeling the edges of his smile begin to crack. To Lila, Nix said, "George taught you how to read?" Lila, who was unpracticed enough with people to misread the moment, nodded and sat back.
"Yes, we had to read all the time. Knowledge is power," she recited in a voice that was clearly an attempt to imitate George's.
They nodded. Benny took the opportunity to ask her some questions. "Lila, have you been alone all this time? I mean, since Gameland?" She nodded.
"Alone."
"How did you survive?" asked Nix. Lila turned cold eyes on her.
"What I see," she said. "I kill."
"God," said Nix. Benny said,
"What about the Waystation monks? Do they help you at all?"
"Monks? We don't talk. They have their, things. I have mine."
"Tom said he saw you twice."
"Tom," she said, and shook her head.
"He looked like me, but he was older. Darker hair, darker skin, tall. Carried a sword."
The Lost Girl brightened and smiled in a way that Benny thought it showed she not only knew who Tom was, but maybe betrayed something more than simple recognition.
"Sword man," Lila said. "Very, pretty."
She looked at Nix for approval.
"Pretty?"
"Handsome," Nix said. "Hot." Lila liked that word.
"Hot."
She turned to Benny.
"But dead?"
He nodded. "The hammer shot him, and he fell into a bunch of zombies." Her smile vanished.
"Then he's a walker."
Benny couldn't bear to think about that and changed the subject. "Lila, Tom said that you could tell people where the new Gameland is."
"What people?"
"People in our town, in Mountainside." She shrugged.
"Why?"
"I think he was hoping to have Charlie arrested. Do you understand what that means? Arrested?"
"Read about. Old world stuff. Not our world."
"No," said Nix bitterly. She touched Lila's arm. "Tell us, though. What happened after they took you and Annie away from George?"
"George,"
she said in a small, sad voice that was an echo of the child she had once been and would never be again. She sorted through her conflicted emotions and jumbled thoughts.
"They hit George. Killed him, I thought. But not?"
"No," said Benny. "He was hurt, but he lived. As soon as he woke up, he started looking for you and your sister. He met Tom, and they looked together. They couldn't find you. I guess George didn't know where to look." "How far is Gameland from here?"
"Far. 3 days fast walk. 2 mountains from here," said Lila. "Have to know how to, find it. Hard to find."
"George never found it. All he heard were rumors of what goes on there. It tore him up." It took Lila a second to understand that last comment. Then she nodded.
"George loved us. Loved him. He is dead?"
"I think so. A monk told Tom that George hung himself." Lila barked out a harsh laugh and shook her head.
"No,"
she said decisively. "Tom didn't believe it either." They sat for a minute in silence. "He was murdered," Nix said eventually. "Do you think it was Charlie?"
"Or one of his creeps," said Benny.
Lila's lip curled, but she said nothing.
"Lila, tell us about Annie." "Annie."
Lila's eyes were as hard as knife steel, but they glistened wetly.
"They took us. Lots of girls at Gameland. Boys, too. They make us fight.
She loaded that last word with enough venom to kill 100 men. Did they make you fight? Nix asked, and Benny winced, not wanting to hear the answer. But Lila shook her head.
Tried. Many times they tried. Fought them instead. Bit. Kicked. Thumbs to eyes. George taught me. Taught Annie.
She made a fist so tight her knuckles creaked, and the lights in her eyes looked both dangerous and a little crazy.
Be tough, George said. Be tough and live. George always said that.
George was right, Benny said. I wish I'd met him. He sounds like a pretty great guy. Lila gave Benny a slow up-and-down appraisal, perhaps reevaluating him. Or maybe seeing him for the first time and getting who he was. She nodded, although Benny wasn't sure if it was an agreement with what he'd said or a confirmation of some unspoken thought.
So you fought? Nix said, perhaps a little more sharply than was absolutely necessary.
Lila's eyes lingered on Benny as she said,
Yes.
What did they do? Nix asked, and this time there was more compassion in her voice.
They beat me.
Lila shrugged as if that was nothing. As if measured against all that she had endured, it was a small thing. Nix paled and Benny shivered.
Beat me a lot. No food.
Nix cursed. Lila gave another shrug.
Made me tougher. Made me mad. Mad enough.
And Annie?
She ran.
They looked at her and saw a tear break from the corner of one hazel eye and roll down her tan cheek.